RDR's methodology, as you know, it's based on international human rights standards, right? So the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the UN, the United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. The idea with these adaptations is to understand how to localize it. So in order to do that, we had conversations with the partners. In your case, we sat down and tried to figure out which aspects of our methodology make sense to the local context.
Welcome to a special episode series of Pretty Good Podcast, recorded live at the Digital Rights Asia Pacific Assembly in Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Engage Media is here with hundreds of changemakers from a broad range of sectors who have come together to build knowledge, collaborations, and momentum on digital rights in the Asia Pacific.
In this series, we are featuring a number of DREPAC 23 participants working across pressing digital rights issues.
I'm Vino from Engage Media. We have today a very special guest. We're very honored to have this person, one of our great collaborators in the Greater Internet Freedom Project. We have the Global Partnerships Manager of Ranking Digital Rights, Leandro Tuferi. Leandro, welcome to PGP Live.
Thank you, Vino. The honor is mine. Yeah,
that's great. So you've been attending the DREPAC 23 Assembly for a few days now. How is it for you?
It's my first time in Thailand, which is exciting, and I think it's been a hectic few 3 days. Today's the fourth day, so I'm just now free to just mingle around and see a few of the sessions. During the past 3 days, we've been hosting some of the sessions ourselves, and it's been intense but pretty rewarding. Getting to expand our the group of friends and networking around the Asia Pacific community.
That's really great. So I mentioned in the intro that we collaborated under this Greater Internet Freedom Program, which is being led and implemented by Internews with the support of USAID. So maybe you can tell us more about the work that Ranking Digital Rights does within this program.
Yeah, so I joined RDR in 2021, and it was especially to start in the GIF project. And Engage Media and our collaboration was actually one of the first partnerships that I started to work on. And in this project, our main priority was to understand the needs of local organizations to know how they can learn from our methods and standards to study tech companies, right? So RDR's focus, as you know, it's to evaluate and study tech companies' commitments to respect human rights and users' rights. And the idea with these partnerships and the expansion of the community that focuses on corporate accountability is to grow these local adaptations of RDR's methodology and the approach that we use to study tech companies. So it was an absolute pleasure to work with you on that project, and happy to discuss more today, yeah?
Oh, that's really great. And thanks as well. I really enjoyed that collaboration. But just going back, when you said that one of your goals would be to figure out the needs of country-level partners when it comes to engaging tech companies and maybe looking at some of their practices, when you did engagement with these country partners, what needs were brought up when it comes to these discussions?
Yeah, I think there's a couple of things that we're learning through this process. I think one of the aspects is on the logistics itself of doing a research project with local organizations that have varying degrees of skills in doing research, doing data collection, analyzing policies. So I think we saw a huge need there in terms of training, in terms of providing feedback and having just a consistent communication and feedback loop throughout the whole process to ensure some quality in the whole process, right? And I think that's one challenge that may come up depending on the partner, but it's something that we're increasingly focusing on and trying to understand how can we make it easier to understand, you know, the human rights standards that we've developed and how to study tech companies and so on. And then another aspect is when localizing human rights standards. RDR's methodology, as you know, it's based on international human rights standards, right? So the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, the United Nations Guiding Principles on Business and Human Rights. So the idea with these adaptations is to understand how to localize it. So in order to do that, we had conversations with the partners. And you know, in your case, we sat down and tried to figure out which aspects of our methodology make sense to the local context, especially if there's, for example, you know, a huge interest in network shutdowns, right? So how can we study the role of telcos specifically? We have an indicator for network shutdowns. We have an indicator for network management, which is related to zero rating and net neutrality. So I think it's more about understanding those aspects because it's also tied to the capacity of the local organizations that are, we've often heard this, you know, civil society is overworked, long hours, a lot of things and fires to put out. So we also want to make sure that people can do research that is meaningful with the resources in terms of time and people that they have at their disposal, right, in a given time in the year.
Okay. So it was mentioned that you have the RDR methodology, basically, and then we try to adjust and adapt that based on the needs of our country-level partners. But just to go back with how these methodologies was created, so you mentioned that it was based on international human rights standards, right? But when it comes to adjusting that to the country-level perspective or the country-level policies, how do you actually balance that? Because, you know, some of them are like, these jurisdictions agreed to those international human rights standards. But in the case, take for example, of countries that are not signatory to those, how do you balance it out?
Yeah, no, that's a great point. And I think that's why localizing it to the needs of a given country is important, because the RDR methodology doesn't really take into account the national legal frameworks in a given country, right? It's in a way agnostic to those aspects, because the idea to have a human rights, like international human rights framework or baseline for these kind of methodologies is that you can assure some kind of comparability across companies and across jurisdictions. So when we developed the methodology, that was really important because RDR itself evaluates 26 companies around the world. So it's not only in the US or in Europe, but also we evaluate Russian companies, Chinese companies. We evaluate telecommunications companies beyond Europe, such as in the Middle East, in South and Southeast Asia with Axiata, for example. Also South Korean companies like Samsung and Kakao. So there's a huge variety and diversity, right, of legal context. That's why one of the primary aspects of developing these kind of standards was how can we ensure that comparability across the board? Now, with adaptations, of course, that, you know, the logic is different because the partners actually working in a country are interested in how the legal frameworks affect the performance of a company. For example, if there's a legislation that actually obliges the company to publish a transparency report, a sustainability report, or to have a privacy policy in place with a data protection law. So all of those things, even though, for example, our methodology has indicators about privacy, right, and about data protection, for example, covering things like if the company discloses how they collect the data and for what purposes and with whom they share the data with. But that doesn't mean that, you know, through the research, you can figure out how it's related to a specific data protection law. So that's the role of the partners in doing these adaptations, like figuring out if the company is actually complying with the law or not based on those disclosures that the company puts out proactively, right? Which is the main focus of doing this kind of research. And one of the limitations of the methodology, right, it's you only evaluate publicly available information on the company's websites, right?
Which is affected by FOI policies locally as well.
Exactly. So That's one limitation, but it has a lot of benefits in that, you know, you can really assure any potential threat actor, like a government or like the company themselves, that you're just using this research or doing the research with publicly available information, you know, nothing sensitive and so on, which is, it is a concern in a lot of jurisdictions, like facing threats and so on. So that's one aspect. Yeah.
So I guess there's the limitation as well. Take, for example, if in relation to access to information, right? If the local laws does not compel or require these companies to actually disclose certain user privacy disclosures or the reports, it would be hard to implement those and find materials to those indicators, I guess.
Not really, because the idea with the research itself, the way the indicators that you evaluate, they are framed in a way that you just need to know if the company actually publishes something, right? Some kind of policy, some kind of document, some kind of statement on their websites.
So it's not really about the content, it's just if it's available then?
Both. Yeah, it's actually both. Because there are some indicators that are just about if the company publishes policies, and some indicators that go more in depth about the actual content that you need to assess. For example, with the privacy policies and the terms of service. However, that doesn't mean that you can't use tools such as freedom of information laws to actually, you know, try to figure out, I think, some indicators related to those kind of, we'll say, research methods are, for example, regarding the government requests of user data. So, for example, one of our indicators studies if the company discloses information about the requests from governments, right? If the governments send requests to the company about user information, for example, geolocation or subscriber data, and maybe the company doesn't disclose that, right? So with the research, the evaluation of the indicator would be, okay, the company doesn't disclose that, maybe it's just a zero, so the company doesn't earn points because they don't have any actual disclosure. But one potential use case of these kind of research methods or research tools, I guess, with freedom of information laws would be actually maybe going to the government and saying, okay, can you give me information of how many requests have you sent to this company, if at all? And then you can contrast and compare. So that's one of the aspects that I'm increasingly interested in exploring with partners that are doing like hyper-localized adaptations in a given country, because it allows us to go further in, you know, putting the findings into context, which I think it's also really important.
Yeah, might also be applicable to, take for example, telco companies that are government-owned. So they might be covered by some FFI laws, but I understand that for most of the applications, maybe it's the Securities and Exchange Commission and the policy around it that applies more when it comes to disclosures of this private companies, right? But I just wanted to go back and touch on you mentioning about tech companies in the Asia Pacific that you have looked into. So those that have been done by Ranking Digital Rights and those that you have worked with country partners, maybe within GIF or outside, can you name some of those that you have looked into?
Yeah, so as I mentioned earlier, one of the main telcos that we study ourselves is Axiata. And actually with our collaboration, I think one of the highlights, once the report was published, in your local partner in Sri Lanka, which evaluated Dialogue, the subsidiary of Axiata in the country. And after the report was published, we actually, the local partner and you heard from the company. And we actually got the chance to all meet together and share not only the findings, but also understand more about what Dialogue is doing in the country. So I think those aspects are really interesting in this expansion of the community of corporate accountability, researchers and advocates, because RDR can only cover a handful, right? We're just covering 26 companies. And as you said, so we're expanding the number of local or regional companies throughout the world, not only in Southeast Asia, Asia Pacific, Central Asia. We're also working across Africa and Latin America. in this region specifically, telecommunications companies, there's a huge interest in focusing on those. Yeah. But also, I think that's because there's an expansion of their business the business ventures and services that they're offering. So now we're also working on a project with three other organizations in South Korea, Taiwan, and Malaysia. And they have done, well, each of them did an adaptation in each of the three countries. And regarding the telcos, for example, in South Korea, our partner there, OpenNet Korea, they were really interested in exploring further that business expansion, right? Because the telcos now are going into a diversity of digital services, not only offering access to the internet and phone services, but also being involved in advertising, being involved in AI assistants or like voice assistants. So I think that's really important to understand through these adaptations. Like, we can go further into specific services that are relevant to the people living in these countries. Yeah.
Okay. I will ask about impact now. So we do a lot of this research studies, but I wonder, aside from the one you mentioned with us and Dialog Asiata, when it comes to the other parts of the world, do you have any other success stories that you think would be the goal when it comes to engaging these companies, tech companies?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think, the goal is always ideally to have the companies engage in the process, right? So we want the partners to be able to feel comfortable and confident in going to the companies, sharing their findings, sharing their analysis. And ideally the company would come back to that with feedback, sharing their internal challenges. I think it's important to establish a line of direct communication. Build a relationship with company representatives. At the end of the day, the companies are run by people. And I think it's important to understand how those internal dynamics play a role in shaping the policies that affect us, not only as users, but as humans living in society, right? So I think all of those, connecting the dots across all of that takes time. It's not something that you can just do from 1 month to the other. So I think in terms of impact, we've had, fortunately, really, really good, success or, highlights across some of our partnerships in Africa, especially, for example, in Lesotho, also one of our partners in the GIF project. They evaluated also telecommunications companies and financial technologies companies. But with the telcos, they evaluated a subsidiary of Vodafone. Vodafone, the telecommunications company from the UK, they have an extensive network of subsidiaries in Africa, usually under the brand Vodacom. So Vodacom Group is based in South Africa, and then it's owned, it controls Vodacom Lesotho. So our partner evaluated Vodacom Lesotho, and once they finished the report and we did the launch and so on, actually we were able to connect the Vodafone representative with the partner, and they were able to have a direct conversation, not only with Vodafone, but also with all the three levels. So Vodafone UK, Vodacom Group South Africa, and Vodacom Lesotho, which I think that was great. And after the conversation, they committed to reviewing certain aspects of the policies at the local level, which is for telecommunications companies a huge win, because there's such a disconnect between, to generalize, but usually one of the concerns is that you have these companies at the global level, they usually perform really well, have really solid scores because they are trying to comply with regulations in the US or in Europe, usually in Europe. So they are really careful about their headquarters, like what's happening at the really global level. But then when you go to the local websites in a specific country with a subsidiary, it's pretty difficult often to find information about those same transparency reports or the same level of policy disclosures. So I think that's always a huge win when a partner, a local organization, gets the chance to actually meet with representatives from the company and explain those disconnects and the challenges. And another one also in Africa, another partner with Vodacom as well, but in Tanzania. And we also were able to coordinate a meeting that together with the Global Network Initiative, we're also as part of the GIF project, having a conversation privately with the company to understand, again, the challenges that they face at the local level and how it translates across, you know, all the chain at the company. So I think those two, in the last year or so, were definitely a highlight.
You are in that field of engaging tech companies, and I feel like there's a lot to learn among digital rights organizations in the Asia Pacific when it comes to engaging tech companies. We're mostly doing work when it comes to building knowledge and collaborations within civil society or with the broader public. But I feel like we're all aspiring to do much more work when it comes to engaging tech companies, platforms, take for example. So I guess, in your opinion, how can we do better when it comes to engaging them?
Maybe a matter of just strategizing and building the right connections. And I'm also new, and you know, I think our collaboration was one of the first introductions to the region, and that was a huge eye opener in terms of the needs, the level of comfort as well in doing this kind of research, and how ready maybe some local organizations are to have those direct conversations with companies. So I think it's more a matter of how can we build the network within civil society to make sure that the local organizations have, you know, the tools to actually meet with the companies. I think maybe that's our focus right now, like understanding that. I would guess it's also a matter of paying attention to the local services. You know, what specific services make the most sense, and how can we bring more scrutiny to that? But of course, there's many challenges that come with it. One of the things that we're also learning from this research that we're doing with our partners, for example, in Malaysia, is that there's a lot of government-owned services.
Yeah.
So then that becomes a question when it's a government-owned company running these services. And if the governments are not really open to scrutiny, then, you know, how can we pressure that administration? So I think I don't have the magic solution to that. I think it's more about, as I said, with the methodology, if you're only using publicly available information, then I think that provides a level of comfort in terms of just making sure that, you know, you're not doing anything sensitive or not using confidential data or confidential information, and maybe that helps with the perception from the government. But at the end of the day, it's also about how can you establish the relationship with the companies from a perspective of collaboration. It's not always naming and shaming. I think it's more about when this is the first time that you're doing this research, it's about building that connection first and making the company representatives understand where you're coming from, right? What are your goals? What's your purpose? You're not there to just shame them in that, hey, you're not doing this and you should be doing this. It's about how can we provide you a roadmap so that you can actually improve your practices, make better for your users, but also at the same time improve your reputation, improve your brand, improve your perception in the market. Just to add really quickly, you know, an experience from another region. We had a question for sensitivity purposes. I can't say specifically which company or region, but there was really one question from company representatives to our partner in terms of, you know, how will this help us get more investments, right? So how will this research help us be, you know, better positioned to be more profitable and to be more, to grow economically and so on. And I think it's directly connected because we've seen increasingly that there are going to be legal frameworks one way or the other, sooner or later, put in place that will force the companies to be more transparent, to do human rights impact assessments, to do human rights due diligence processes. So I think doing this kind of research really helps paint that picture to these companies, right? That it's now that they can take the chance.
Okay, sorry, I have one last question. So because you've done several partnerships already in the Asia Pacific with countries in South and Southeast Asia, East Asia, I wonder if moving forward, do you foresee doing much more engagements with country partners or regional partners in the region? Because maybe some of our viewers might be interested in linking up with Ranking Digital Rights, and they see that looking at tech companies that are based in their countries and maybe checking out how the RDR indicators apply to them might be an interesting thing for them, and they want to do it. So I wonder if do you have some direction as to how do you want to expand your work in the region?
Yeah, no, that's a great segue, I guess, to kind of like a PR last minute comment. Is that a couple of things. So we have an email address, which is partnerships@rankingdigitalrights.org, which we invite anyone to just email us, reach out if they have questions about not only RDR's work and the methodology, but also ideas for collaborations, concerns about company engagement. I think we're always interested in hearing about that and specific needs of resources to do this kind of work. That's one thing. And then just the past couple of months, we've actually published a couple of resources to help organizations start up with this work. So we published a new RDR research lab that provides a step-by-step guidelines and tutorials to create a project using our methodology. We have a knowledge center to help researchers understand the methodology indicators. And we have a toolkit, a scorecard toolkit, which is basically a tool to create the infrastructure to do the research, to collect the data and assess the company. So with these three resources and tools that are publicly available for anyone to use, we want to lower that barrier of entry and facilitate the process. And of course, we're eager to learn more about how can we collaborate with local partners.
Okay. Thank you so much, Leandro, for sitting down with us, letting us know more about the work of Ranking Digital Rights. And we hope to see you again in the next convenings.
Thank you, Vinny. It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much for watching another episode of Pretty Good Podcast. For more episodes, please visit engagemedia.org/podcast, or you can also head over to cinemata.org to watch previous and upcoming episodes of Pretty Good Podcast, basically. Thank you so much, and see you next time. Bye-bye.